Now, when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for holding on. And I guess my mind is getting weak. We talk about the donors, the donors, the donors, but we forgot to mention, at least I say we, I forgot to mention the donors. For this past couple of weeks, as everybody knows, I was out last week. But since I've been on, or since before, we have, here are our donors, our latest donors, Ken. We always call him Big Ben, Ken of Lynbrook, New York, because he is just like clockwork. He really is. Really appreciate what he does. So he sent a donation since I was on last. And we had Miss Buddy Kirkland. God bless her. She lives about 90 miles, 100 miles west of the crow flies from here. She's the widow of the one and only Buddy Kirkland, called him Mr. Buddy. Well, Mr. Buddy saved our bacon here at Blood River Radio several times when we were struggling. So that's... Ken Big Ben of Lynbrook, New York, Miss Buddy, and we also have Jay Z from Blood River Radio Zone AB, my brother, my old Army brother. He was combat wounded up in he visited the VC up in close and personal in the, like LBJ would call it, in Vietnam. Anyway, he's my brother, and I thank him for sending that in. And we also have Biscuit. Old Biscuit, just like Jay-Z, he says, and Ken, like Big Ben, with our core donors, people, we'd be dead. But I'd like to thank them so much. And I forgot them. We talked about the donors the first hour, but I forgot to mention them. And I'd like to ask them to forgive me for that. But anyway, folks, we picked up my brother. I consider him a brother, a spirit brother, Paul Fromm from the frozen tundra up north. Like Paul says, the once upon a time, the great white north. But we have, and I'll make this quick. We have the AmericanFreedomNews.us, online paper put out by my brother Don Wassel. It's a great article there. They're probably going to discuss, it's just serendipity, I guess you'd say. It meshes with a story that Paul Fromm has to tell us about. Paul, if you will, I'd like to welcome you back, Paul. This is Paul Fromm we're talking about. I'd like to welcome you back. Thank you so much for coming on. And you were just so happy. Tell the people where you were. Where you've been recently, who you went to give a talk to, and this article, Don's going to bring this article up that will mesh perfectly in with the talk that you gave. So if you will, take off, tell us what you did with this foreign country you went to, Paul.
Well, Eddie, I was in Japan, and one of my purposes going there was to interview Makoto Sakurai. He is the head of the Japan First Party, and he was the founder. I spoke for them back in 2019 at a big meeting they had in Tokyo, and my topic was the Great Replacement, and particularly the evil role of Kudenho Kalergi. Kalergi was a very interesting man because he was part Japanese. His father was a Austro-Hungarian diplomat in Tokyo, and he fell in love with a Japanese aristocratic woman, and they married. And out of that marriage came Richard Kudenho Kalergi. And in 1922, he authored a book, which in English is called,
I'll think of it. The Clergy Plan.
Yeah, it's a clergy plan. Anyway, it became the blueprint for the European Union. Basically, the plan he laid out was to eliminate all nationalities in Europe and international boundaries and do away with nationalities, no more English, no more German, French, Italian, etc. Oh, what a beautiful vision. Get rid of us. But it got more sinister. Okay, how are you going to do that? Well, he said that we're going to have a new European man. Well, who's he going to be? He's going to be part of a mixed Asian and African. Well, how's that going to happen in Europe, which in 1922 was 99.5% white? Well, the how is going to be mass immigration to replace us. And the wonderful new European man who would be a mixed race, part African, part Asian, would be ruled over by a new moral elite who'd be Jews. Well, it's hard to believe anybody ever would follow that, except moral degenerates. In fact, Adolf Hitler referred to Kalergi as a vagabond. Well, that maybe it has more bite in German, but vagabond in English suggests kind of a bum, well, moving from city to city. Kalergi was by no means poor. He came from an aristocratic family, and his cause attracted a lot of money. The Rothschilds gave him in 1922, I think, 60,000 gold sovereigns. I'm not sure what they were worth, but it would be considerable. And he moved in the right circle. So his idea had a lot of followers, including, believe it or not, Winston Churchill and Franklin Roosevelt. Now, it's very clever because the plan wouldn't be brought in immediately like that. They kind of hit the long-range goals. It started with the common market right in the 1950s. And, superficially, it might make some sense. Reduce some of the tariff goals, barriers, just make commerce between among the European nations more easily. Then that began morphed into the European Union, and now you're beginning to see the breakdown of national boundaries, and now the European Union tends to be sovereign over nations. That's one of the reasons Britain left in Brexit. They no longer wanted 50 million European Union regulations governing everything, and right down to the size of a piece of cheese. I now remember the name of his book, Praktischer Idealismus, or Practical Idealism. And for what it's worth, he was also a member of the Grand Lodge in Vienna. His ideas, like the Fabian Socialists, would be implemented on the installment plan. So you'd never quite know, never quite want to react. You don't want to be an extremist or overreact. So some of the initial steps didn't seem too bad. And it was only in the 1970s that people began to see how these things would turn out. And that was mass third world immigration. And the European Union's all for it. In fact, they voted little countries like Hungary and Poland and Latvia to let more third worlders in, and they've said no. And they're in a lot of trouble. And one reason that Serbia does not want to join the European Union is just that. because what will end up is there won't be many more Serbs. Serbia won't look much different from Ankara, Turkey. Anyway, that was Kalergi, and my talk was very well received. So I wanted to interview Sakarai to get a deeper understanding of where he's been.
Paul, we have to go to a quick break. Bloop Radio family, you got about 2 minutes. You don't have a list. It's going to be a short break. If you get coffee, if you hurry, but don't be late. Be right back, folks.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, "If those people," referring to the dictatorial federal government, "if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home." As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you magnificent. Dear Blood River Radio family, just so happens I have some of these issues left that we're always talking about. It's a booklet that the fellow is on this program right now, Mr. Paul Fromm. We need to talk about this occasionally. Paul is the director of the Canadian Association of Free Expression, and he's also of the Canadian First, the Canada First Immigration Reform Committee. He wrote this pamphlet talking about that book. That he just mentioned a minute ago. I'll get him to repeat the title. But this, you can read this quickly. We have a few Blood River Radio. We have a few left. I'd be glad to get you one for a donation. It's called The Cult of Kalergi, The Planned Replacement of the European People by Paul Fromm. And I'd like to say this. If you read this booklet right here and you watch the Super Bowl tomorrow, you will see, in my opinion, the culmination of this plan right here. Because one of the plans they were going to get that Kalergi talked about, they wanted to get blacks introduced into athletics. Don Wassel talked about this on the first hour. One of the easiest ways to get blacks into society where they can breed with the white women is to put them in sports because they are fast. In general, they're fat, big, fast, strong, and make good athletes. So they can get them in there and pay them tens of millions now. And that's work. So if you watch the Super Bowl Sunday, people, you'll see the fruition of this Kalergi. The blueprint that he put out, that he's talked about in this pamphlet, has come to pass. How about that, Paul?
You're absolutely right.
Take off on that, Will.
You mean Dawn?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Hey, Mom, I'm getting over. Yeah, we just lost Will. Go ahead, Don.
Only my closest friends call me Will, but you can call me Don. No, I'm only kidding. It's interesting. I posted an article on AmericanFreedomNews.us today called Japan is Cooked, and I've always been interested in Japan. I have a lot of respect for the Japanese. I mean, they're just an island country that became an incredible economic engine after being totally defeated in World War II, in which they fought amazingly, courageously, and they were just, they were forced to submit to a humiliating surrender. But they rebuilt their country. But they've also been a target for a long time of the New World Order, the globalists, the Satanists, whatever you want to call them. And Japanese society was flooded with pornography and a lot of feminism, too. And what's happened in the last 10, 15 years is a lot of Japanese men, young men, don't want anything to do with women anymore. They don't want sexual relations. They don't want a girlfriend. They just find it too stressful or whatever, but they've the natural harmony between men and women that we talked about last hour, Eddie, certainly used to be there between Japanese men and women, but it's not anymore. So you have a society that was targeted, but they held out against mass immigration like the other Oriental countries. They've always been homogenous, and Japan has always been homogenous with, there's a tiny minority of non-Japanese there, but not anything close to what it's like in Western countries. But what's happening now, they're being pushed to become multicultural. And this article that I posted today, it's from a Substack column by somebody calling himself The Great Reject. I don't know a lot about him, but I liked the article, and so I posted it. And what he's saying is that the new Japanese prime minister, who, as we were talking about last hour, just happens to be a woman, Sanai Takachi, something like that. I hope I didn't mispronounce it too badly. She supposedly is against illegal immigration, but is encouraging legal immigration. Now, what's that mean? It means non-Japanese, and not just Oriental non-Japanese, but from around the world. And if you look at this, scroll down, the author of the Substack, he posts a couple tweets from a couple of women that are distinctly not Japanese. One is named Rochelle Kopp, K-O-P-P. And she's encouraging blacks in Japan to file racial profiling lawsuits against police. And then there's another one called Alana Schubach, who's from New York City, who just by pure coincidence also happens to be Jewish. And she is the author of a book called The Case for a More Multicultural Japan. And there's actually an article, headline from an article there with the same name, The Case for a More Multicultural Japan. With the subhead, the aging nation must first consider its future. Banning hate speech would be a crucial first step. Now, what's that mean, banning hate speech? That means banning anyone that would speak out against the country starting to be flooded with non-Japanese. So you see the same old agenda and MO that we've seen all through the Western countries. And, of course, Japan is going to become extinct through the birth rate is declined so much there. But, of course, the answer is not to make it a non-Japanese country. So that's why I posted this article. And what do you think, Paul? Do you think that Japan will go multicultural now or racial?
There'll be tremendous resistance. They've been pushed in that direction for years by the United Nations and, of course, by the Jews that you're talking about here. This Alana Schubach, I see here in your article, is the author of The Case for a more Multicultural Japan. I'll tell you what Japanese say. And these are people, a number of whom have visited the West or even lived in the West. So they're not, they're not unsophisticated people. And what they say, when you pose it to them, well, there's a suggestion that you should, maybe take in, over a period of time, 10 million maybe people from Africa and 10 million from the Indian subcontinent and maybe 10 million Chinese. Well, at that point, their faces turn red. They detest the Chinese. Anyway, when I posed this some time ago to a Japanese friend, he said, well, then we wouldn't be Japanese anymore. And I never, I have seldom heard a better summation of the case against mass third world integration anywhere. Because you'll be replaced and you just won't be Japanese anymore. The culture, the common understandings, the manners, it's often hard, for foreigners to learn. They won't be there anymore. One of the big issues right now, according to the man I've interviewed, his name is Makoto Sakurai. He was the head of the founder of the Japan First Party. He ran for governor of the region of Tokyo. He didn't make it, but his party does contest elections, and they're very vigorous. And he made a name for himself 20 years ago when he wrote a book denouncing the Koreans in Japan. And he started off his discussion with me. He said, we're a homogeneous nation. And, you know, we could say the same thing. Historically, England, when I was born in 1949, you see pictures of London in the late 40s, the 50s, the 60s. There, it's almost all white. Europe was homogeneous. America, with the exception of the blacks, was homogeneous. It didn't have races from every corner of the earth, and the whole thing wasn't up for grabs. As Pastor Tom Robbins pointed out many times to me, the constitutions of every one of the original 13 colonies stated you couldn't be a citizen if you weren't a white male and usually a good character. There was never a question. Well, you know, if you popped in from Turkey or popped in from China, that was even possible, you could become an American too. No, you couldn't. It was a white man's country, and the same in Canada up until the immigration revolution of 1965. We were.
Can we lose Paul?
I think so.
Okay, we'll tell you.
Blacks and Chinese. We were a European country. In fact, the man on the back of a $100 bill in Canada, Sir Robert Borden, stated in the election of 1917, Canada is a white man's country. And that wasn't controversial. That was up there like saying, well, Canada gets a lot of snow. Nobody disagreed. His opponents in the Liberal Party didn't disagree, and a small socialist movement before they became Jewish Marxists. These were mostly hard-bitten coal miners from Scotland. They didn't disagree either. In fact, they were the strongest opponents of Oriental immigration, the socialist trade unions. Canada is a white man's country was not controversial. Today, of course, that's inappropriate. You've got to resign. Any senior candidate other than me said that. Hell to pay. And the difference is that my small political party doesn't give a damn. anyway, Sakurai's point was Japan's a homogeneous country. And he,
We have to go to a break. We have to go to our bottom of the hour break. We'll put you back up as soon as we come back. Folks, so if you got plenty of time to get a coffee, get about 4 minutes, but don't be late coming back. About 4 minutes.
Okay. That's it.
How would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Mary Rose. Senate Majority Leader John Thune supports the Trump administration's decision to confront the threat posed by the Iranian government.
We've got a lot of interest to defend in that region of the world, and it has implications not just for that region of the world, but for the entire world. And so I think the president and his team are right to take it seriously to ensure that America's national security interests are protected there.
Thune was interviewed on the Salem Radio Network. Senator Tom Cotton says Democrats don't seem to have an appetite for even common sense compromises on immigration.
There are some sensible and very popular immigration compromises. Those have to be paired, though, with heightened enforcement measures. And it just doesn't seem that's like where the Democratic senators are right now.
Senator Cotton, an Arkansas Republican, made his comments to the Salem Radio Network. The Milan Cortina Winter Games have officially been declared open. Spectator Grant Edson says he's looking forward to a break from everyday life.
I do have to believe that the Olympics is free of politics and enjoy this moment for what it is, which is a celebration of athletes that have made it to this point, a celebration of Milan as a host, and...
U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance and his wife, Second Lady Usha Vance, were in attendance. A federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to restore funding for a new rail tunnel between New York and New Jersey. Friday's decision comes as construction was about to stop due to a funding freeze. The Trump administration had halted $16 billion for the project, citing concerns about unconstitutional spending. U.S. District Judge Jeanette A. Vargas approved a temporary restraining order to keep the funds flowing while the case plays out in court. More on these stories at townhall.com.
In today's fast-paced world, professionals face endless projects, deadlines, competition. To thrive, you need mental clarity, sharp focus, and reliable memory. That's why the same company that brings you Relief Factor created ThinkFactor. ThinkFactor is designed to help you think clearer and perform better daily. It's a powerful blend of nutrients that supercharges your memory and sharpens your focus. You can stay on top of your work and outshine the competition. After a couple of weeks of taking ThinkFactor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And you know what? The longer you take ThinkFactor, the better the results are. If you've ever felt mentally foggy or struggled to keep up with everything on your plate, well, ThinkFactor can help you reclaim your cognitive edge and thrive in your life. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, to order ThinkFactor. Call 800-4-RELIEF or visit ReliefFactor.com. Your first bottle, just $19.95. ThinkFactor. Think clearer, perform better daily.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some man you just can't reach.
Dear Blood River Radio family, without further ado, because time is money, money is time, we're going to go right to my brother Paul Fromm. He's going to go right back to Bishop about his talk he gave to Japan. It was a Sakurai? I'm probably butchering that Japanese name. But go ahead, Paul. Finish your talk, brother.
Yes. I did an interview with Mr. Sakurai on my recent trip to Japan, and he started explaining to me, I asked, well, how did you get into all this? Well, 20 years ago, he wrote a book about the Koreans in Japan. And there's a complicated history. Japan ruled Korea from 1912 to 1945. And there were some Koreans who came to Japan. Also, there were some Koreans who remained loyal to the Japanese army. And they were being defeated in World War II, came to Japan. Anyway, there's an uneasy relationship. And Japanese are very polite, and they have a lot of taboos. They're not loud and outspoken, like some people are. And one of the taboos was that the Japanese didn't like the Koreans much, but didn't want to say anything. Well, Sakurai wrote a book 20 years ago, and he became quite famous, and he also put on protests. We do up in Canada, and many of the patriots in the States do. Well, this grabbed a lot of attention, and this is the Japan First movement, as you might imagine. It wants to put Japan first, not the United Nations or international treaties or alliances. And it's particularly concerned about immigration. By our standards, it's not very high, but it stands out like a sore thumb or something else in Japan. And they're already having trouble with some of the minorities, for instance, the Turks. The Muslims. Muslims want more graveyards for the Turks to bury their dead. Even the Japanese prime minister has told them, you can't have them, and if you want to bury your dead, ship them back to your home country and bury them there. And the thing, the issue here is Japan has very little land. If you look at the Japanese islands, you want to take a brush or a magic marker and go down the middle of certainly the main island of Honshu and the northern island of Hokkaido and cross out just about all of it except the area around the sea. Much of Japan is mountainous. It's good for lumber, good for, believe it or not, for snow and things like that, but very little population. So the population of 130 million is crowded basically along the sea of the main islands. So the Japanese have traditionally cremated their dead. They don't have the room for interment the way we often do in much of the West. And this is a big issue. And he explained to me, if the Muslims had simply bought a tract of land and buried their dead there, it wouldn't be that controversial. But he said they demand. And the Japanese take offense at that. Here are the newcomers wanted to push you around and tell you what for. Well, we've had that experience in North America, haven't we? Especially with the Jews. They just come off the boat, but they want to tell us what to do. Well, the Japanese don't put up with that. Anyway, there's more to it, but they are a spirited people. And I was most impressed with the Japan First people. It's so very clear. We're a homogeneous nation, he says. And that's where North America got off the track. The United States was a melting pot of Europeans. It wasn't a melting pot of huge numbers of Chinese and recent Africans and Aborigines from Australia. That was never the thing, the reality. So we have to get back to that clear thinking. We're a homogeneous population, or mostly. We don't want to change it. That's the important thing. We don't want to change it. And I know Don's article was somewhat critical of the Japanese prime minister, and it may be true. I don't know. But she, too, has stood up to the pretensions. And she's also mentioned that, you know, this pressure of the UN to, you need more diversity because you have an aging population. She says, well, yes, and we might just have to accept more expensive services. There's an alternative to importing the rest of the world to supposedly want to take high-level jobs to pay the taxes to keep us in our old age. And that's all nonsense. That's not what most of the immigrants do, especially the illegals. They take low-level jobs and pay low taxes or no taxes. They're not supporting the system.
And they clog the welfare state. They roughly, in the United States, they said, and I think this is a low-ball estimate, roughly 60% of all illegals are on some type of governmental subsistence. And they do it the way they do it. One of the main conduits is through their children. You know, the children. We got to say, it's all about the children. But that's how they do it. They load, and I can tell you by anecdotal evidence, I see it every day, they absolutely overwhelm the infrastructure, the highways, the hospitals, the schools, anything that can be used, they overwhelm it. And they're like you said, Paul, they demand the demand. Anyway, that's just my two cents.
And it's beginning to really get under the skin of the Japanese. And there are several nationalist parties now, Dr. Rai was telling me. And so he has the satisfaction of seeing his ideas spread, and there's a strong anti-immigration movement in Japan, not just Japan First Party. Regrettably, Sakurai's not able to lead the party anymore. He's got serious health problems, but they have a new leader, and it's really good to be around people with clear thinking. And I could never be Japanese. I could learn Japanese. I could live there. But I would never be accepted as Japanese. And they're very particular. There are Japanese that emigrated over 100 years ago to Brazil and Peru, who still speak Japanese, and most have not intermarried. If they go, when they go back to Japan, they are recognized as being different. And, you know, they're accepted as part of the extended family, maybe, but they're still different. They're not quite Japanese. And that's that's different from North America, where we want to bend over backwards for everybody. But they've got pretty good self-preservation instinct, and I really admire that aspect of the Japanese people. Another thing I admire: it's so clean. I was in a train station, and I don't know, there was a scrap of paper, not much bigger than a postage stamp. And immediately some fellow with a dustbin comes along in a group and sweeps it up. I mean, you wouldn't want to drag your tongue over the train platform, but it's almost clean enough to eat on. And, you know, if you traveled in the third world, you know, that's not the way in many other countries. You don't even want to eat off their plates.
You got that right. I can identify with that. You know, if we have enough time, I'll bring it up. We're going to a break any minute, but if I have time, we were talking about during the break, before this last break, about Oxford, Mississippi. First of all, Little Rock, Arkansas, 1957. Oxford, Mississippi, probably 1961. Tuscaloosa, Alabama, I think in 1963. Paul and I, we met a man, his name was Leonard Wilson. They call him Flagpole Leonard, I think. But anyway, he's the one that climbed the flagpole at the University of Alabama when John Fitzgerald Kennedy nationalized the National Guard, made them federal troops, and brought the governor, George Wallace, off the steps of University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa. White people in Little Rock, in Oxford, in Tuscaloosa, fought those federal troops. There was men, one or more killed in Oxford, Mississippi. Here's the thing I was telling Don and Paul, was so sad and alarming. The grandchildren of those people that fought tooth and nail to save white culture in those cities, Little Rock, Oxford, Tuscaloosa, now their grandchildren, rhetorically speaking, probably call their grandparents hate mongers, racists, homophobes. I mean, it's how the hell did it turn around like that? Well, anyway, folks, we're going to this our last break of the second hour. We'll be right back. Maybe the guys want to jump in on that. We'll find out. Be right back, folks.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power, naked, merciless force!
Blood River Radio fam. We're going to go right back to Don and get his take on what I said a minute ago about the cities that were invaded, and now they're about the grandchildren of people like Flagpole Leonard telling him he's a racist. How did it happen so fast, and what can we do to reverse it? Even though we talked about what we can do to reverse a little bit on the first hour. But anyway, go ahead, Don, and then we can bounce back to Paul.
Okay, yeah. To go around it a little indirectly, since we were talking about Asia, Australia is probably as bad a shape as any former Western country. They have, during COVID, it was the most locked-down country in the world, maybe, and they have a huge Asian population there now. But if you think about it, until the mid-1970s, Australia had an open, explicit white Australia policy. That's what it was called, white Australia policy, until 50 years ago. And now look at that country. So that shows you how fast things can change. And Eddie, I think the explanation for what's happened in this country and what you're talking about is pretty easy, actually. It's relentless, nonstop, uncontradicted propaganda. And not only that, but part of it is making people understand that if they violate or they dissent in any noticeable way, they will be punished. They will be punished. They will be humiliated. They may lose their job. They may go to jail. This is what we've been bombarded with for, just like Australia, for 50 years now. Now, How many people want to stand up to that? How many people want to risk everything when they know that even if they do, it's not going to change anything? So I think that's the crux of it. That's what's happened. We have a unitary system, even especially when it comes to propaganda. It's advertising, it's movies, it's the so-called news. It's all combined. It seems like there's all these different institutions and this and that, but they're all pretty much the same. They're all in the same wavelength, and they're constantly bombarding us with the party line. So how do you stand up to it? How do you get people to come together to stand up to it? I think that's why it's succeeded so well. It's totalitarian. It's total. It's a totalitarian onslaught.
You're mentioning more people are becoming aware, and that's the first step. I was watching CNN last night, and because there's that's the only English language TV I can get where I am right now, and they were chattering on about the tweet that Donald Trump put out the night before about the stolen elections, but in it was some cartoon where Obama and Michelle Obama are apes. Well, that's just, they were just going bananas about that. Not the apes, but the people on CNN. Along the way, though, there was some crazy, amazing admissions. Look, one of them was saying, if a CEO had made a mistake like that, he would be out immediately. The board would fire. And if you're an employee and you made a mistake like that, you'd be fired. And if even a senior person had done something, the board would not apologize or just apologize for them. Your career would be on the line, no matter who you were, CEO or garbage man. I thought, in other words, for they call this racist. I'm not sure I would say that, but expressing a wrong opinion, whether you're that CEO of a Fortune 500 company or the fellow who pushes the broom, you'd be fired. And I thought, and this is the land of the free.
Well, you know what else? You know what strikes me too. I think back, like when George W. Bush was president, you often saw caricatures of him as an ape. Because he was seen as so stupid, but there was no uproar over that. It really tells you that these people, these liberals, these anti-whites, white people that are so offended by it, they actually think they must deep down think that blacks do resemble apes to the point that you can't even make fun of a black person like that was done, showing them as an ape. You can do it with a white person, but if you do it with a black person, it's so racist. Now, why is that? What mentality? I would think enlightened people would think, well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. It's not saying that they're apes or blacks or apes, but it's just, it just triggers the usual suspects, the professional anti-racists. I don't think there was anything point. At all wrong with it.
Great point.
No, I agree with you, but the fact that it would be laid out on CNN as clearly as that. Now, whether that's true or not, even the perception that if you say what is considered to be racist, you deserve to be fired, whether you're at the low end of a company or you're the CEO who has perhaps through his genius and drive made millions or billions for the company. One wrong word and you're gone. That's back to the days of Soviet Russia.
Well, just wait till the Democrats are in power again, Paul. It's going to come back with a vengeance, even worse than it was under Biden. While you're on here, Eddie, is it all right if I ask Paul a question about Canada and the U.S.?
Well, of course.
Okay, because I'm looking at castfootball.us, and somebody posted a Canadian poster today. He titled his thread "Canada to Buy F-35 Jets," and he goes on about that the government there is shifting from the F-35s to maybe another one, and what do people think? And I don't know anything about the various capabilities of fighter jets, but this is what I posted in response, and I would like to get Paul's take on this. I put, I'm no expert on the capabilities of various fighter planes. What bothers me is how Trump has gone out of his way to ridicule and alienate Canada and thus cause somewhat serious damage in the relationship between the two countries. There was a movie from 1995 called Canadian Bacon, a comedy starring the late great Canadian comedian John Candy, about an unpopular American president who decides to demonize Canada as a diversion from his own political problems. And then as a side note, it's amazing how many really good comedians have come from Canada. Besides John Candy, there's Martin Short, Jim Carrey, Norm Macdonald, and the recently deceased Catherine O'Hara. None of them Jewish, by the way. I believe the first South Park movie also had a plot involving a prospective war between the U.S. and Canada. Obviously another comedy, as no American seriously believed the U.S. and Canada would ever be anything but friends. Trump envisions himself as this great peacemaker, when in reality he's a neocon warmonger who continues to cause more and more countries to look to alternatives to the U.S. dollar and the U.S. itself, as Trump's flip-flopping and chaotic personality are anything but conducive to peace and harmonious relations between nations. What do you think of that post, Paul? Would you agree with that?
Oh, boy, you said it all. On the F-35, I guess, fighter, there's quite a controversy. It's very, very, very expensive. Now, it's allegedly very good, too, though there's been endless technical problems. The competition is the Gripen, produced by Sweden. And a lot of voices in Canada are urging Canada to reduce its dependence on the United States, simply because under Trump, it's become unreliable. The talking about becoming the 51st state, there may or may not be an argument in favor of that, but it's not really one hand Trump any friends by pushing at that. And along the same lines, I admire a lot of what Trump did and has accomplished, but I was just sickened with the bullying and the threats that over Greenland. Greenland's owned by Denmark. Denmark's a NATO ally. Denmark's on side. Denmark agrees that there's problems of Soviet and possibly more likely Red Chinese movements in the area. They're all for fighting against it. It's not though the Danes are some sort of crypto armies. They're not. And what should be worked out is what more can be done by the United States and by NATO to shore up the defenses and the agreement. That's not controversial, but this idea, he's going to buy it. I mean, imagine some Chinese gazillionaire saying he's got to buy the state of Washington. Well, you don't know whether to laugh or spit in his face. Trump had the right ideas out of office and America's involvement in all these wars, but he's, I'd say, especially in the Middle East, the man's a disaster.
Well, it's shocking to me that Canada and the U.S., that there's actually friction between the two countries. I mean, there was never, I don't think in the world history, there's ever been two countries, we have this long border, it was never a problem. I mean, we were on the friendliest terms possible. At least, Americans have always thought highly of Canada and Canadians. I think mostly that's true, in Canada as well, vis-a-vis America. And now you've got, there's hockey games when the American national anthem is played between a Canadian team and an American team. The Canadian fans will boo. I mean, it's just a shame, all this friction. It's totally unnecessary.
Man, I'm so sorry we're out of time. We've run completely out. Paul, I would like to thank you. I was praising all the people, our white brothers that come on this show to keep Blood River Radio going, and you're one of them, Paul. I'd like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being my brother, being a brother of the white brothers and sisters out there, and I just can't thank you enough. But anyway, people, we're going to transition to the second hour. We're going to pick up Gene, the bitter ender, still bitter, more bitter than ever, bitter ender, Gene Andrews. So be right back, folks. Get some coffee. You got about 4 minutes.